First, recent commentary in various news organizations has asked and tried to answer the question, can we save rural America? Some analysts have said that no one, from policymakers to people who actually live there, seems to know quite how to succeed. But our next guest says this idea that no one knows how to solve the challenges of the rural parts of the country is misleading. Gene Hardy is a doctoral candidate at the University of Michigan School of Information. He wrote the recent CityLab piece, How Rural America is Saving Itself. Gene, welcome to Central Time.
Hi, Rob. How's it going?
Good. Well, now, why is it problematic for you when you see headlines like, can rural America be saved? And this implication that somebody has to swoop in from the outside to save rural America.
Well, I think that you just answered that question, right? Is that oftentimes when people are asking these questions, how can rural America be saved? They're not necessarily asking it from the perspective of a rural person. It's usually someone like a writer at the New York Times asking this question.
Now, you've worked in researching rural communities, especially in Michigan and Wisconsin. What kind of stories do you see in rural communities that you say, yeah, these are success stories?
I've been doing a lot of research recently in the Keweenaw Peninsula of the Upper Peninsula, which is a very, very remote region. It's about a 4-hour drive from the nearest metropolitan area. And people there are very proud of their region and very proud of their heritage and what's going on there. And they do a phenomenal job of building community organizations and partnerships to support each other in their endeavors. And there's lots of You wouldn't expect, say, a college town like Houghton, Michigan, which is a college town of 7,000 people, to have, you know, two business accelerators, co-working spaces, and all of these other things that people often associate with urban areas. But they're there, and that's because people have learned that if they want to be able to have these resources, that they need to develop them for themselves and not expect somebody from the outside to do it for them.
But how about a small community, a town that, say, doesn't have something like Michigan Tech there? Are there ways they can do similar things to solve some of the challenges of rural communities?
Definitely. I mean, it's a lot harder when you don't have larger institutions like a college maybe footing some of the bill. But there are definitely ways that you can do that. Oftentimes, economic developers use this process called placemaking, wherein they kind of evaluate what is like special about a place and then make development decisions based upon that. Many rural areas are in what we like to call kind of amenity-rich places, where people like to enjoy the outdoors, do things like mountain biking, skiing, snowshoeing. So economic developers take a lot of those things into account when they're making the decisions to kind of move a place forward. When you have a small town that is in an amenity-rich location, but it's not necessarily taking advantage of those amenities to the best of its ability, it's the kind of the economic developer's job and local, you know, municipalities to make sure that they're kind of moving in a direction to where they can kind of take advantage of those amenities. But that's also, I mean, that kind of, I think we frequently fall into this kind of trap of being able to kind of measure what success looks like.
Right.
And that is usually like very active and, you know, constantly growing and all these other things.
Right. That's a point you raise in your CityLab piece, that we might have one model of success that we look at in a big city that involves, hey, we brought in this huge technology company or this this group of startups that's growing and rapidly increasing local revenue. Mm-hmm. You say maybe we need to have some other definitions of success.
Yeah, I mean, what people perceive to be success is exactly like attracting big outside business, you know, population growth. High tech businesses are obviously a huge thing right now, as we saw with the case of the second Amazon headquarters and what's going on with Foxconn down in Racine. So that is kind of like that is the bar that these communities are supposed to be hitting. But when you live in a town of like 2,000 people, of which probably employment is steady. There's not necessarily the opportunity to kind of bring in these high-tech businesses. Instead, I think what we need to be thinking about, rather, is what resources do towns need and do people that live in these places need in order to kind of live the lifestyles that they want to live. And I think this goes back to issues around sustainability. Every town in every rural region isn't going to be this kind of poster child for success. part of what I want to be doing is understanding what people in local regions kind of perceive to be success.
Talking to Gene Hardy from the University of Michigan School of Information about a piece he wrote in City Lab called How Rural America is Saving Itself. Gene, I spent a day at a visioning community visioning session in Princeton, Wisconsin, a small town, and I heard from people from high school students to retirees, all the things they loved about living in a community that size, for one thing, with the kind of access to nature, whether it's hunting, fishing, boating, other forms of recreation. We have a lot in our smaller communities that people want to live there. How do we harness that to make it economically viable? Because the other thing I heard from people is like, I love it. I don't know if I could stay here because I don't have a job.
I mean, that's a big question, right? And that's, wages are an issue around the world, and access to, around the United States, and access to education is also an issue. So one of the big issues that I'm hearing from business owners and economic developers, as well as kind of like people, like everyday citizens, is that there's kind of a mismatch between like expectation of labor and wages. And a lot of it comes down to a lack of affordable access to education. So the past 20 years have obviously seen states kind of continue to defund education at a drastic scale. Obviously, circa 2008 was kind of the peak of that, and we've been fortunate enough to kind of see some of that rebound. But people don't necessarily have access to the education, whether that's a bachelor's degree or an associate's degree or even vocational education in high school. There's just less of that available. So oftentimes, business owners don't necessarily think that they can kind of attract and find the kind of people that they need. So I think that there's this weird disconnect here, and that business owners don't necessarily see the labor that they want. So they're not offering the wages that maybe local people really need, and local people can't necessarily get access to the education easily that would allow them to get those higher wages. Obviously, rural America has a poverty problem. I mean, urban areas also have a poverty problem, but I think in particular, rural areas have fewer resources to kind of address poverty issues that aren't social. Obviously, rural areas have a phenomenal are known for phenomenal tight-knit communities that can offer social support. But I think a lot of it comes down to that access to education.
Another thing that people often refer to as a problem, but you say, hey, maybe it could be an opportunity, is the aging of the rural population. As often younger people move out, there aren't maybe enough kids to support that local school district. How can that be turned into an opportunity, though?
That's a really good question, Rob. I don't necessarily have an answer for that, to be honest. That was just something that I've been thinking about a lot recently, because people often have these conversations like, oh, we need to attract more young people. We need to get more young people to move to our community. But every rural area is not going to be able to attract masses of young people to move there. So at that point, you have to flip that question, and you have to be asking yourself, so what can we do with the people that we have? Like, oh, if we are actually attracting a lot of retirees, and a lot of, you know, the Upper Peninsula and Northern Wisconsin, a lot of rural communities attract a lot of retirees because they like the quality of life. So how then, I think the question then becomes, then how do we take the kind of experiences of aging populations and turn that into something that can be utilized in moving forward? So for example, I'm in Iron River, Michigan right now, and they had a school close, but instead of just, you know, keeping it abandoned, it's become a community center where a lot of organizations, especially organizations that serve the elderly, have been able to find low-cost access to facilities in order to provide opportunities for this aging population in the region.
Now, given that there's probably not a one-size-fits-all approach for all different rural communities, how can we direct, you mentioned earlier, assets? How can we direct assets to local communities to empower them, I guess, to come up with their own solutions?
Yeah, that's another great question, Rob, that I'm not necessarily a policy person. So I research, you know, how people live their everyday lives and how technology and community kind of come together in unique ways, particularly in rural communities. But one thing I'm seeing as I get more involved with economic development organizations is so much of what they have access to is especially at the municipal level, is actually state-sponsored loans rather than grants. And an issue that comes with most state and federal loans is that they require matching funds. And if a small community doesn't necessarily have the capital to generate matching funds, then they don't have access to those loans. So I'm being very pie in the sky here right now, right? And I would love to see a drastic shift in the amount of grants that are offered to local municipalities and to economic development organizations in rural areas to support the kind of development work. I think people perceive that there needs to be that every single community needs, you know, millions and millions and millions of dollars in investment. But a lot of these communities would love to be able to do projects that cost, you know, $100,000, $500,000. If the tax structure in the United States was a little different, we would very easily be able to kind of fund that work.
You mentioned technology, and a lot of people point toward the need for rural high-speed internet, rural broadband. Is that an important part of the puzzle?
Oh, definitely. I mean, one of the things, you talk to every single rural person, and internet connection is a major issue. The problem here, though, is that, the way that I see it is that as soon as rural areas kind of catch up to urban areas in broadband speeds, urban areas are catch up, you know, for example, wherever urban areas are right now, whenever rural areas kind of reach that level, urban areas are going to be vastly ahead of rural areas. So there's always going to be this cat and mouse game. So for me, I think that we have to simultaneously understand that, yes, rural areas need access to affordable and high quality, high speed internet. But at the same time, the work that I do is really trying to encourage tech companies to think about rural people when they're designing their technologies. I mean, a lot of us know, like, whenever we're updating our smartphones, that the file sizes keep getting larger and larger. And technology companies keep, designing technologies that require larger and larger bandwidth. And as rural areas continue to kind of trail behind, we need to be thinking more about what bandwidth and file size requirements are necessary to kind of engage on a sort of day-to-day basis as a digitally informed citizen.
Do you think on an issue like that, technology issue, maybe on policy issues too, people from urban areas who are making some of these decisions are starting at least to pay more attention to the needs of rural America?
I think so. I think actually where they're paying the most attention is actually in the developing world outside of the United States. So Google and other large companies have, you know, I mean, Facebook has an app that you can download that is designed with developing communities in mind. So I think that these companies are starting to kind of recognize that, you know, not everybody has access to high-speed internet, and they're trying to make informed decisions. Unfortunately, as we kind of progress into this kind of digital age or whatever you want to call it, they need to work harder and they need to work faster to make sure that rural people and people, I mean, you know, rural people everywhere, not just in the United States, are included in this.
Gene, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you very much, Rob. I appreciate it.
That's Gene Hardy, doctoral candidate at the University of Michigan School of Information. He wrote a recent piece in CityLab called How Rural America is Saving Itself.